Welcome to the Game Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Well, Justine, what do you have for us this week? Who are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about Cordelia Kingsbridge, Seven of Spades series.
Oh, another series you're going to talk about.
Another series. And, you know, sometimes I can do the most recent book, and sometimes I start with the first one. And in this one, because I think that this is a new author to many of our listeners, I'm going to start and review the first one in the series called Kill Game. So the main characters in this one are Levi Abrams, the police officer, who is still in counseling because he was involved in an officer-involved shooting where he killed a suspect who was holding a little boy hostage. The other main character is Dominic, a bounty hunter, who is in recovery for a gambling problem.
They have issues.
They have issues. So this book has some romance, and it also has a fair number of hot sex scenes, which are either gratuitous or absolutely necessary, depending on what your view of hot sex scenes are.
They can be both.
Oh, that could be. So crime, however, is prime. This is a book about gruesome serial killer. The serial killer doses his victims with ketamine, then poses them, slashes their throat, and leaves behind a playing card with the Seven of Spades on it.
Ooh, you've got my interest.
Yeah. And he goes after people who committed crimes that haven't been punished by the justice system. So criminals that got away with it, got off with excessively light sentences, and he kills them. And so he ends up getting a fair amount of public, not so much public support, but maybe a little grudging. People don't want to really condemn him as much as they might condemn other serial killers.
So he's a sick and twisted vigilante.
Yes. And he fixates on Levi. He ends up calling him with an electronically changed voice and talks about how much Levi must have enjoyed killing that suspect who is holding the child. And then he also fixates on Dominic. He leaves presents for Dominic with the Seven of Spades card in the presents. And obviously not, you know, he doesn't murder Dominic and leave the card in his body. He actually leaves the card on a present and only does that to Dominic and doesn't do that to anyone else. You know, there's some minor characters you might enjoy. So Dominic has his 100-pound dog. Sounds a lot like Maria in the background sometimes. And she's a personal protection dog.
For those that don't know, Maria is Justine's dog.
Yes, who's a 100-pound German Shepherd and protects me against every shadow there is. And, you know, I can't get too excited about these books because then she starts barking thinking somebody's coming after me too. And they each have Levi's got a Jewish mother and Dominic has an Italian mother. Dominic has a neighbor couple where the man is trans and recovering from his bottom surgery, recovering from his top surgery, and the man's girlfriend. So they're a committed couple. And so you have all these minor characters who make up the fabric of their being. Towards the end of the book, they end up catching who some people think is a serial killer. But since it's a series, you can guess.
I think I got a good guess.
Yeah. So this is getting a flaming recommendation.
Oh, flaming. So those sex scenes are good.
Oh, they're very good. And they're either gratuitous or absolutely necessary.
And as I said, sometimes that's both.
That's right.
And those are the best.
They are.
Anything else to add?
So, Requeered Tales has just released Like People in History by Felice Vacano. It is one of the classics in gay literature, the gay epic novel. And there are people, many people of my generation, probably a little older than your generation, who found this to be the defining book of their generation.
Well, I heard Felice Picano interviewed not long ago, and maybe someday we can get him on this show because he's an interesting guy.
He is. He's written a great mystery called The Lore, which is still in print, and so Recreate Tales didn't get the rights.
And so that's it for the week?
That's it for the week.
Okay. Well, so we got another flaming recommendation. Those are always fun. And
yeah.
Thank you, Justine. We'll talk to you next week. If you enjoy Gay Mystery Podcast, let others know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. My guest today is John Copenhaver. John's historical crime novel, Dodging and Burning, won the 2019 McCavity Award for Best First Mystery Novel and garnered Anthony, Stan Critics, Barry, and Lambda Literary Award nominations. He writes a crime fiction review column for Lambda Literary called Blacklight. His work has appeared in Crime Reads, Electric Lit, Glitter Wolf, Pank, and others. He chairs the 7th through 12th grade English department at Flint Hill School, and he currently lives in D.C. with his husband, artist Jeffrey Paul. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you so much for having me on, Brad.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you on. I got to say, you have a substantial number of writing credits, but Dodging and Burning is your first novel. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, it's incredibly impressive considering the amount of buzz there's been over the past 9 months over your book. You must be very proud. Amongst the list of things that I've listed, you've got Publishers Weekly starred review, Library Journal starred review and debut of the month. Bolo Books said it's a masterpiece of tone and voice. The Associated Press called it a riveting debut. And you have additional accolades that just go on and on. Very impressive. How does it feel to have gotten so much attention for a debut novel?
Well, I mean, I guess the short answer is that it feels great. You know, I mean, I feel I've been working on this book. If I add up the number of years total with getting it, you know, finding an agent, getting it published, it's about a 10-year process. So to reach the end of that and then have all that hard work pay off with a lot of positive feedback. It's great. And, you know, I love all those accolades. I tell you, some of my favorite feedback is the more anecdotal stuff that I get from readers. So, you know, I think all of that, it feels great. It feels good. I mean, I think the hard part is now the second novel, right? So, right. You're like, okay, you've done that. Now you keep it up. And so, I think there's sort of an implied sort of pressure there, whether it's external or internal, I'm not sure, but, yeah, it's been great. It's been really great. I'm so glad people like the book.
Well, I'm glad to hear what you said about the second novel. Your book and my book came out almost the exact same time. And I'm currently working on my second novel. And I'm guessing you're like me. I'm going through this. Okay, is it a one-hit wonder? They're going to find out. I'm going through that. They're going to find out I'm a phony, which, you know, you hear all the time.
Yeah.
So,
Imposter syndrome.
It's imposter syndrome. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I know. Feeling that these days kind of, as I revise my novel, I'm like, you know, it's just so hard to have any kind of perspective on your writing. I think as you're writing it, it's not like the same brain you take to kind of, you know, out there kind of talking about your book and sharing about your book is such a different place than the writing brain, which is, you know, so creative, but also full of doubt and all those things.
Well, you were talking about anecdotal things you've heard from readers. What's one of the most interesting things that you've heard?
Yeah, well, I received an email through my website from a woman who is a lawyer. And she said that she spends so much of her life with words, and she had for the longest time kind of fallen off of reading, or she was reading, you know, I guess what she called sort of real page turner beach reads. And even that was kind of not working for her. And so she was just, it was sad. She was feeling sad about her reading life. And she said that she sat down with my book on a Sunday and spent her whole day reading my book. And that, you know, it really moved her. And she was, you know, it's so glad to have actually had that experience and feels like it sort of renewed her belief in reading and that kind of thing, which I think, like, I mean, that for me was like the highest praise I got on the book. It's just that sort of feeling of reaching out to a reader and someone really, you know, sinking into my story and enjoying it. And I don't know, it was a great thing to feel. That feedback was really great. It was awesome.
Well, yeah, that's brilliant feedback. I definitely understand why you would feel that way. Well, before we do anything else, though, you have to give us the description of the story.
Okay. So the story is set in, right towards the end of the Second World War. It's about a young gay war photographer named Jay. And he takes this photo of a crime scene. He is set to meet this young woman named Lily for a photo shoot. He, you know, it's sort of something he's doing on the side. And when he goes to meet her, she has been murdered. And his instinct, being a war photographer, is to snap pictures to document. And he ends up showing this photograph, which actually I have reproduced in the book. He shows the photograph to a young woman named Bunny Prescott, who is in love with him, unrequitedly, of course. And Ciola, this 12-year-old kid, sister of his lover, and his lover is missing in the Pacific. And so my two narrators are Ciola and Bunny, and they're telling the story from, you know, around year 2000, looking back 1945, and kind of unwinds the mystery really unwinds sort of what was the photograph actually a picture of? Why did Jay take it? And is everything he's saying about this photo the truth? And it ends up being a lot about the sort of the power of photography to really misrepresent the truth, and Jay's journey to sort of his own truth about his sexuality, and during a time period when it's very hard to even, you know, have a definite sort of sense of, I don't know, example or any model for you out in the world. So, you know, it's as much about his journey as it is about the mystery behind the murdered woman.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of different factors to the story without sounding overly complicated.
Yeah. There are definitely lots of moving parts. But I love the sort of idea of this image that kind of had everything sort of centers around this image, and it constantly gets reinterpreted throughout the book. So, you know, I love complicated layer stories. I think I'm always going to. I love that sort of feeling of things slowly coming into focus as a story unravels. You know, it could be a real pain to write. you know, I'm like, why did I have to make this so complicated? But I think that I really enjoy the effect that it creates. You know, I think that certainly Dodging and Burning does that.
Now, although this is your first novel, I know you've done plenty of other work, sometimes behind the scenes.
Yes.
Can you give us some more of your literary background?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I've been writing since I was really in high school, telling stories, and I eventually wound up in an MFA program at George Mason, which is just outside of D.C. In fact, it's what brought me to D.C., and for the longest time I was writing short stories mainly because, that's what I had time for. And I think have a novelistic imagination. And I was in my MFA program, they're always saying, this story, it really feels like it could be a novel. And so I was like, yeah, I think that means I need to write a novel. And so I wrote one for my MFA thesis, and that's actually my first written novel, but it's safely on the shelf, not to see the light of day, I imagine.
We all have those.
Yeah. And Dodging and Burning was my second novel that I wrote. And I think that, you know, I think I've been writing articles for Lambda Literary and pieces for Crime Read and Electric Lit and kind of things like that along the way. But I think, you know, the center of my creative life is certainly the novel. And I love short stories, but man, they're hard to write. And I'm always impressed by people who do a great job with them. But yeah, so, you know, a little bit of everything.
I find short stories a challenge too. I've been trying to write one for a while now, just as a gift to my readers. And I thought, oh, this will be easy. I'll just pop it out, you know, a couple of weeks. It's not that long. Mm-hmm. No, it's been a struggle. It's a lot of work to get something in such a short amount of words.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, I think it's a little more akin to writing poetry in some ways, because it just has to be so precise. And you can't, unlike a novel where you can have sort of, you can go a little bit, you know, in different areas or maybe even different tangents. A short story has to be really honed. You can't waste any space. And I think it kind of has to be an idea that can't take up too much space too. So if you have this huge, sprawling, complicated idea, it's just not going to work in a short story form. So it's kind of have the right idea as well.
Now, you say you've been writing short stories since high school, but can you pinpoint the moment in your life when you decide you wanted to devote so much of your life to the literary arts?
I mean, honestly, high school. Okay. I've always been a storyteller, as I like to say it. I haven't always been a story writer. Back when I was a kid, my mom gave me a camcorder. My second love is film. So my mom gave me a camcorder, or she gave it to me. I think it was just the family's camcorder. And I, you know, took it and I started making murder mystery movies, which were pretty hysterical. and I was telling murder mysteries, like totally Agatha Christie, you know, Murder, She Wrote, ripped right from, you know. And so I'd force all my friends to play all these roles. And I was definitely like the director and cinematographer and everything. And my poor friends were, you know, completely at my mercy. But I was, you know, I was telling a story then. In fact, some degrees I was writing it down before, you know, and then when I got to high school, I realized, oh, like, this is really something I could write, and I could really do so much more in writing. That's when I caught the bug, and I was like part of my school's like literature group. It was called the Writer Symposium. It would meet every week or so and share stories and stuff. And so it's really kind of goes far back. I think I've always known that I wanted to write.
We saw very similar for a project in high school. I did a 10-minute version of The Great Gatsby. So,
oh yeah, that's great.
On film, I have it somewhere. It's hysterical, but obviously we had to cut corners for 10 minutes. So, is there one book or set of books that perhaps set off that spark for you?
Really, if I'm talking about when I'm young, I would have to say, you know, Agatha Christie. You know, I mean, that seems so terribly unoriginal, but the truth is that Agatha Christie was like for, you know, high school and middle school students was like a real sort of bridge text to more adult literature. A lot of middle schools read Agatha Christie. And so I think that plus sort of being exposed to the great movies like Death in the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express and Evil Under the Sun. I remember watching Evil Under the Sun over and over and over again. That's really where I started thinking about the murder mystery. And then, you know, once I got a little older and more sophisticated in high school, there are other books that I think influenced me. I mean, weirdly, I was reading a lot of Stephen King in high school, not really mystery stories, but some Patricia Cornwell and that kind of thing, thrillery kind of things. But I don't think I'm really a thriller writer, at least that's not what I've written so far. But, and then in college, I started reading more, I guess, what you would call literary books on my own. And that's where kind of college and grad school, I found, I think what I would really cite as my influences for this book, which would be like Margaret Atwood and Patricia Highsmith and, you know, even like Sarah Waters, who I think is brilliant, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's sort of a gradual, you know, but I think there are all these little parts of those writers somewhere in Dodging and Burning and probably somewhere in all the things that I write, because they kind of become part of you.
So let's talk about gay mysteries. What writers inspired you to pursue this subgenre?
Well, I mean, I honestly didn't, I kind of came at it because, I mean, I'm a writer who, you know, wants to write fiction. And I, you know, it wasn't the first thing I landed on, just because, I mean, some of these great writers, you know, like Joseph Hansen, Michael Nava, Catherine Forrest, et cetera, there are just so many great ones I was unaware of, you know, I just didn't know about them. And so I didn't, you know, it was once I really became a writer, I came out of the closet a little late in life in my early 30s. So, you know, that was when I kind of started being aware of these writers that were out there and seeking them out. Fortunately, we definitely have, and I think it's getting better, but still true to a certain extent. You know, it's hard to find books unless you're looking for them. It's hard to stumble across a great book like that Michael Nava might write, or Joseph Hansen or something, just, you know, on, you know, just because you're flipping through a bookshelf at Barnes & Noble, you know, mm-hmm. you have to know to look for them. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think a lot of people would love these books that aren't gay, that maybe are gay, just don't know about them because they haven't, you know, found that yet. They haven't sought it out. I wish we could just bump into these books. Anyone could just bump into these books a little more. You know, I guess that would be the dream for the future.
Well, you and I sound very similar. I didn't come out to my mid-30s. And before then, you know, like I would go to Barnes & Noble, and they always had that little nook that was called Gay and Lesbian. Yeah. And all I ever saw there were, you know, what it was like to be a homosexual, or there were a lot of literary works, but I never saw genres or subgenres. So I was just as surprised as you to find gay mysteries and other type of subgenres that exist out there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I'd love to see it right on the front shelves.
Yes. Yeah. Why shouldn't it be?
It'll come.
It'll come with time.
Well, among the many things that I listed, you write a crime fiction review column for Lambda Literary.
Yeah.
How did you become involved in that?
Well, I was twice gone to the Lambda Literary Writers Retreat that they do yearly for a week, usually in the summer. I knew about the organization. And by the way, it's a great, that retreat is great. I mean, I think that that was such a life-changing experience for me. I think it was at AWP, I bumped into William Johnson. He's like, you know, we're really looking for someone to write a crime, you know, basically review gay, lesbian crime fiction. Would you be interested? And he said, you know, send me a sample. And so that's what I did. And kind of the rest is history. I came up with this sort of concept of a column, which is, you know, fine. Mainly I did that just so I could have an intro and kind of say what the endeavor of the column was about. But really it's just about, you know, creating more exposure, reviewing these books so people will find them. Within the community, find them. And also, I think raising the sort of status of crime fiction, even within the LGBTQ literary community. I think sometimes sometimes even, you know, out in the world, crime fiction isn't taken terribly seriously. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think there's a lot of crime fiction which is, you know, just as good as any literary novel, if not better. And so, you know, I think that there shouldn't be sort of a unfortunate, you know, kind of status or snobbery towards the genre. So, you know, I think one of my goals with that is to definitely sort of raise the awareness and that there's, you know, there's some real quality writing out there.
Well, I'm going to say thank you.
Yeah. I wish I could do it more often than I do, but, you know, I teach full time and of course there's my writing. So yeah, I'm always like, if you really want to review, I would love to, you know, I could put you in touch with William and maybe help join the team of reviewers that are trying to cover some of the stuff, because I think it would be great to have more books reviewed than I can do, you know? So.
And you mentioned that to me before, that you're interested in seeking writers to do reviews. If someone is interested, what should they do?
Well, certainly you can reach out to me. My website is connected right to my email. So you could just, shoot me an email or find me on social media and say, hey, I'm interested, and I will put you in touch with William. I'm always happy to help too. If you're like, hey, I want to do this, but I don't know how to write a book review, I'm happy to sort of give you tips on that too. It's not terribly hard, but it is, I think that it, one thing that I think is fun about it is I feel like I'm in a conversation. I think that's how good reviews are written. They're like part of a conversation. And so I'm always happy to do that too. So yeah, find me. You can also email William, but sometimes it might help to email me first, because, I imagine a lot of people listening to this podcast might actually know me or have heard of me or met me at some point.
I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have your website on the show notes.
Awesome.
Do you have any idea how many books you have to read before you find one that you feel comfortable reviewing?
I do a lot of research about them first. And so I don't, it's not like I'm going through piles of books or reading them. I just don't have the time, is the truth. So I'm kind of seeing, what's this book's angle is one thing that I'm looking for. Is this book trying, as defined in my opening article for Blacklight, is this book sort of in some ways trying to sort of say something about the genre in a new or fresh way? Or in some cases, is this, an author who has not gotten enough attention? There are plenty that fall into all those categories that I haven't reviewed just because I don't have time. But, I think that's what I'm looking for, particularly books that I feel like, have a real sort of, rich character development and, are taking some issue seriously, but not necessarily. I think that books that are funny and delightful can be actually very serious in an underlying way. So I don't want that to mean like I only write, I'm only interested in gritty stuff. I'm just interested in a writer who does have kind of a serious message or serious ideas moving at, under the surface of what they're writing, if that makes any sense. So
do you ever get a chance to read a book just for the sake of reading? For your enjoyment?
I'm only laughing because I really wish I had more time to do that. Yes, I do kind of steal some time to do that. I'm not sure if it counts, but I was reading, because I was nominated for some of these awards, I was reading my fellow nominees, which was in a sense not, there's no real need for me to in terms of like, it's something I have to do for work or for, writing reviews, but it was really, I really enjoyed doing it. They're terrific writers. So it was really delightful to do that. And so I've enjoyed that, but because I'm also a teacher, so I'm reading for school and I'm often proposing and creating new curriculum. That takes up a lot of my time as well. So yeah, I do the best I can. I look forward to a time when I get to read more for myself.
Well, let's just make this clear. You do a lot of reading.
Yes.
If anybody didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a quick break here for your awkward question authors get.
Okay.
Which I know you're familiar with since you've heard the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to spin the wheel and you are going to get a question that is sometimes a little difficult for us to answer.
So okay.
Just give me a second here or we'll spin the wheel. Okay, John, this one's not too bad. Mm-hmm. Your question is, what do you plan to do when you're done with this whole writing thing?
Oh. I don't plan to be done with it. I think that I'm going to write just always. I can't imagine just being done with it. I guess when my eyes give out or something, and then, that might be the end of it. But, I'm not planning on that for another 40 years, if I'm lucky. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's kind of,
it's just such a part of who I am. It's not, you know, additional in my life. It's like an extension of who I am. So it's just hard to imagine not writing in some way. You know, one time my mom asked me, she said, she could be kind of tough sometimes. She was like, you know, she literally said, what if you, this is before Dodging and Burning. She's like, what if you never publish a novel? And I think what she was asking is sort of like, you know, what if you never, you know, this never happens for you, you know, will you continue to do this writing thing? And I was like, yeah, because I love writing. So I just love writing. I can't get over that fact. So I'll probably always write in some way.
Is there anything else that you would say that you have a passion for?
Well, it's film. I love film. In fact, I teach a film course to my high school students. And I love photography as well. My husband is a ceramic artist, so art of all sorts, you know, interests me. And I think art always kind of plays some role in my novels. It may not seem obvious initially, but it's always there. So, you know, I think certainly that is my another passion of mine. I mean, music too. I love all types of music, but I'm a huge film score buff. And so I have like a huge collection of film scores. And so, which actually helps me write. So I often play them while I write. So it's kind of a crossover. Passion.
Now, are your students aware of your novel?
They are, most of them at least. Yeah, yeah.
What have been their reactions?
Oh, they're great. They have had students, you know, read it and talk to me about it, which is really interesting. And I love that. I've come up to me sort of shyly. They're always very scared to talk to me about it. And so I think that. I've really enjoyed that, though. I've enjoyed having those conversations with them. You know, from a teaching standpoint, I would really love to see more LGBTQ literature in the high school classroom. And, you know, we have a lot of wonderful writers who are doing great YA work, but also for high school, you sometimes want like more adult novels that they can sort of wrestle with more adult themes, but they can't be, you know, explicit, you know, so like finding that perfect kind of book that's serious but not explicit can be a challenge. And so, which actually Dodging and Burning kind of fits into that category. So it's nice that they can read it. And it's not like you kind of, you know, wait till you're older or something.
Well, we are seeing kids more and more carrying young adult novels around. So that's a good sign. But I hope we see more of it in the future.
Yeah.
And speaking of the future, how do you feel about the future of the gay mystery genre?
Well, I mean, I think it's really, you know, pretty bright in a lot of ways. And I hope I'm not being overly optimistic, but I go to a lot of these different mystery writing conferences, VoucherCon or Thriller Fest, and some of the smaller ones like Malice, which is more local to DC. And, I find that there is a growing acceptance and understanding of, you know, creating a more inclusive environment in these spaces, which, you know, I think we have tons of work to do. I don't think we're by any means there, but it's good to see that there's some the people out there that do want to see that happen. And so, you know, I think we got to continue to work at doing it. I think certainly in publishing in general, in the larger scope of publishing, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, mystery stories are just, they're always going to be around. I mean, they're always going to be fascinating to people. I think they're always going to draw people in. And people are hungering for different kinds of characters in these. And I don't just mean like LGBTQ readers. I mean, you know, just your average reader out there doing, you know, looking for a good book to read. I think that there will slowly become sort of this interest and openness. But it is, you got to continue to work at it.
I'm optimistic as well. I know straight individuals that have read my book, which doesn't have any major erotic scenes, but there's a couple of sex scenes in there. And I was like, I wonder how they're going to feel about that. And
yeah.
they didn't care, you know? And, yeah. I think there's just much more of acceptance. So I hope the future is bright as well. I think it is. So if somebody wants to buy Dodging and Burning, what's the best way to find the book?
Well, I'm always going to encourage you to go buy it through your local indie bookstore, because the indie bookstores really help writers very directly. But if you don't have time to do that, which I know we have very busy lives, you can always get it through Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and have it shipped to you. And there's a thing called IndieWire where they kind of work with local bookstores to get, you know, get the books to you too. So you can get that, you know, basically anywhere, anywhere you want to go find it, you can get it. So,
you know, more and more of the authors I have on here are referring to indie bookstores. That really makes me happy to hear. Yeah. I don't know in your area here in LA, they're growing tremendously. It's changed. So it's good to have them back. And it's been good to have you on the show, John.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for having me. It's been really great talking to you.
Well, it's been my pleasure as well. And look forward to the next book.
Me too.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.